I never think of Carta as a fintech company. I think of Carta as Carta.
This liquidity product is something that if you give me some time, I will do all the data, the R&D, and show that this could be a really strong subscription product.
Wow, if we can do this, this is massive. We can change the entire world in a massive way.
I used to say we'd never IPO, and I still stand by that, but people have told me to tone it down.
Henry used to rally against the public markets as outdated pageants that he wanted to abolish. But now Carta has a public markets business unit that's based out of New York.
We knew we wanted to enter our public market business, and to do that, we knew we needed to have an East Coast presence.
Even though every office plays a significant role, this new line of business has given Carta's East Coast presence its own authority.
There is a new center of gravity in the company forming on the East Coast. The public market business is growing. That's going to be a very important piece of our business.
The Salt Lake City office also opened in 2017 to focus on business services. This was a deviation from Carta's original strategy, in which every workplace had a balance of business, product, and engineering.
Our strategy officer predicted that we'd be growing faster than we could recruit in our existing markets. Salt Lake has one of the highest number and highest producing universities of accountants and finance people. It will probably be, by headcount, our largest office by the end of the year.
2017 was full of cultural and strategic changes. The shift in culture was a byproduct of scale. It's hard to know everybody in a mid-stage startup, and that was a big adjustment. As for strategy, the goal was to increase revenue.
In 2017, we would have to go get a Series C, and the C would be a very standard growth round type investment where the charisma of the CEO isn't going to get you anywhere. It's entirely based on the numbers of the business.
The Series C was all about numbers. Research and development was put on hold as Carta optimized pricing.
So in late 2016, we made this deliberate decision to see what price points we could command in this and see if we could build a real revenue generating business. And we realized we could.
Carta's growth has forced Henry to adapt, which is important because according to Harvard Business School's Noam Wasserman, by the time a startup is 3 years old, 25% of founders are removed as CEO. And by the time a company IPOs, 50% are gone. Maybe that's why Henry doesn't want to go public. But seriously, as Carta has grown, he's abandoned his more rigid viewpoints and modulated his tone when speaking in front of the company. And as more seasoned executives have joined, his role has shifted.
My ability to be impactful at an operational level is getting less and less just because of the scale and size of the organization. My role more and more is to be that kind of figurehead. Somebody once called it Queen Ant, vital to the colony, but doesn't do any work. Yeah.
Henry's evolution as a leader was gradual, but obvious. It was like watching a teenage skater punk wash the bleach out of their hair. And for Carta, it was a shift from a pure Silicon Valley startup culture to a hybrid culture that attracts people who have worked in finance.
I go from office to office and say hi to employees and get to know them and encourage them and sort of do all those things, which I enjoy, but is not in my sweet spot. I'm realizing that's the most important thing I can do, but it is difficult for me.
Henry's given special attention to his internal communication skills. Even show and tell is no longer a casual, free-ranging conversation where engineers spontaneously share their raw code. It's less frequent, and like the rest of Henry's schedule, more curated.
Every minute of my day, not just professional, but personal as well, is scheduled for usually about 30 days out. Every minute's scheduled. Almost everything is prepared now and synthesized for me. I rarely see raw information, and I am told what to do and say.
So that's internally. Externally, his calendar is filled with meetings that have no real agenda, no decision-making whatsoever.
Externally, it's called relationship building, where all these investors and all these vested interests want something out of Carta. And so they just want access to me so that they, quote, build a relationship, right? There's a personal relationship there. And so a dinner, right? Just a meeting, a meet and greet. And sort of unfortunately, by design, they don't have an agenda because they want to make it seem more personal.
Henry likens it to a stump speech a politician gives when they travel town to town. The meetings, without fail, always end with someone asking a very giving question in a very self-serving way. How can I be helpful? These meetings happen year-round, but they started with the Series C.
They would just tell me what office to be in at what time. I would walk in and they would play the organ grinder and I would dance like the monkey and do my thing. And it was just the same script, same questions, same answers, you know, 30 times in 2 weeks. And that just never stops.
Welcome to Execute. My name's Theo. This podcast is about the history of Carta and a blueprint for anyone who wants to build a startup in 6 parts. Part 6, an efficient machine.
What is your company from a data perspective? What do you have? How do you make decisions based off the data that you have? And how do you make the right types of decisions? And how do you get the right types of people, I'd say humans in the loop, to make good decisions based off of that? And today, as the world's getting more and more fragmented, systems are getting more fragmented, software is getting more fragmented, you got to put all those pieces together.
Arjun Sethi is a venture capitalist who invested in Carta when he was still working at Social Capital. He's gone on to co-found Tribe Capital. In addition to his work as an investor, he has an impressive background in product. You can tell by the data-driven way he evaluates companies.
You want to have a basis of ground truth and data to start from. So a lot of the work we do is essentially building out a dashboard for the company from our perspective and then letting the company run with that, because a lot of these companies haven't done that when they are small teams. And we have multiple frameworks, multiple lenses that we continue to do, not just at the time of investment, but subsequently thereafter. And so, you know, we've continued to do that with Carta. We continue to do that with a lot of the companies like Slack, Front, Cover, so on and so forth that we're still engaged with today.
Arjun had used Carta for years, but noticed an uptick in growth around the time of the price optimization experiment that Henry described.
Carta's inflection point probably wasn't really starting until maybe 6 to 9 months prior to their Series C. I don't think it was obvious yet. And I don't think it was obvious even when we started taking a look at it and deciding to make the investment. I think you started to see the inklings of the business starting to work.
Social Capital wasn't the only firm that was taking note of Carta's accelerated growth in 2017. The round had some heat.
Yeah, it was heated. I'm sure there were other term sheets. There were other firms. A lot of people had called me and said, congratulations. But I didn't think of it as a winning or a milestone. For us, it was more, we're just really excited to partner with this team and how do we move the ball forward with them. And so we ended up co-leading this deal with Menlo Ventures at the same time. And again, it was around all of an aligned incentive to helping the company win.
Social Capital and Menlo Park Ventures co-led the round. This is unusual. Most fundraising rounds are led by only one firm.
Co-lead really means that, you know, there were two firms, either they were the majority of the capital in the round, or that one did the, or both of them did the majority of the diligence together. In our case, I think, you know, Menlo and myself, we came in pretty equal to the amount of capital we deployed. But in terms of the term sheet, we wrote that. In terms of diligence, we led most of that, and then we shared it with all the investors.
After years of getting rejected by investors, now investors were pitching Henry.
We came in actually with a thesis on how we thought about his company without any of the metrics and what we cared about and what was the hypothesis that we wanted to go after and wanted to understand. And that was kind of our way of trying to show that here's the value that we provide as investors beyond just the capital.
Carta raised $42 million in total when the Series C closed in 2017. It was a successful round, but the private equity landscape had changed. A larger competitor acquired a smaller competitor earlier in the year. Carta even made its first acquisition with Silicon Valley Bank's analytics arm soon thereafter. 4 years earlier, very few people even understood what an electronic certificate was. Now cap table management was a competitive space. With a new name, multiple lines of business, and hundreds of employees, Carta was suddenly a mid-stage startup. But orchestrating all these moving parts presented a new challenge. Everyone agreed a global platform for ownership management was possible. But how?
Ownership is a very important category. I mean, you can think about the ownership of an automobile and potentially having multiple people own the same automobile or a building or a house, physical real estate.
There's no limit to what someone can own. Alessandro, one of the three cousins that joined in late 2014, emphasizes the importance of the public markets as part of this mission, even if it was unthinkable at the beginning.
Biggest difference of all is the fact that we support public companies. Because Henry's mission in the very beginning when I joined was, we're going to end public companies. We're going to make it so no company ever goes public again.
As excited as Al was by Henry's initial pitch, over time, the market spoke. customers wanted to go public.
And all of a sudden, we have big companies that are ready to go public, and we're going to lose those companies. We're going to lose our big customers. Nope. You build public company functionality and you support them because it's very important for your business and because it's going to end up becoming a very large revenue source for those that do go public.
More than just revenue, it's what was best for the customer. Carta had to modify its original plan, which is a critical part of building a successful company. You have to have vision, but you also have to respond to what customers want.
Now, we still have the same goal of making it easier for companies to stay private and to give them options for liquidity so they do not have to go public. But at the end of the day, if they decide to go public, we want to support them for sure.
Carta has been focused on private market liquidity for years. It was part of the early mission. Employees should not have to wait until a company goes public or gets acquired to sell their stock.
I said that if my personal passion was still to focus on this private company liquidity experience, what I should do is build, you know, a team and work with a company that really is the next future of private company liquidity.
Andrea Lamari is mission-driven. She came to Carta after starting her own companies and working at NASDAQ Private Markets.
NASDAQ's whole goal was learning and how to befriend the CFO before the IPO.
Andrea learned something critical when she worked at NASDAQ, an insight she brought to Carta.
I got to spend a lot of time with a lot of the really senior executives. What I got really interested in by way of those relationships was actually the fact that NASDAQ powers 90 stock exchanges around the world. They white label their technology. So they power all of those other exchanges. And that means that NASDAQ has a secret sauce to how they launch marketplaces.
But because there was such a disconnect between Andrea's mission and the overarching mission of NASDAQ, she had to find a company in line with her goals.
So what's super cool about all of this and the story is that I actually feel as though I'm very grateful that I'm calling myself kind of an intrapreneur here at Carta.
An intrapreneur is like an entrepreneur who jumpstarts initiatives inside a company. When Andrea came to Carta, the Series C had just closed and more experienced executives were coming in. But there was still some chaos in the aftermath of our medieval times.
Yeah, so I think what was a little bit chaotic about when I joined Carta was that there was a mixed focus of who and where and how should we focus on revenue. And so I think that what was a little interesting to me is that I joined Carta. I joined under a team called Corporate Governance that was kind of scattered across various products. And what was interesting to me was that our product team and our engineering team was told, you know, focus on revenue, focus on revenue. And in my experience, it was really business that took the focus on revenue and then, you know, kind of helped support product engineering to build products that would generate revenue.
This is when the business unit model started to break down. There's a few reasons why.
The BU structure, if used effectively, can be very powerful. And it's one of the reasons that large companies like an Alphabet or Google transition to it as they scale. But if done really well in a smaller technology company, it could also be really powerful. And I think what I realized 6 months in was we have a BU structure, but the framework that we use to determine when we should have a BU and versus not have a BU wasn't well thought out.
Sumit, Henry's chief of staff, who later became Carta's chief strategy officer, acknowledges the potential of having business units in a startup, but saw problems with how they were implemented when he joined.
What I pushed upon Henry was the idea that if you want to have a business unit, it should solve a very specific pain point for a specific customer set or market. And you shouldn't have two different business units that are trying to solve the same problem set for a similar set of customers.
This problem surfaced early on when business units were divided into companies and investors exclusively. It didn't make sense because there are many legal entities that issue stock as well as invest. Even startups like Slack have a venture capital arm.
So, for example, we had a valuation business and we had an investor services business, and both businesses sold to investors, and they each team had its own sales cycles and its own sales team. And at points, they would be selling to the same VC fund, and it'd be a confusing scenario for the VC fund to be under. And then, you know, both teams would get separate feedback from the same VC fund, and that would help dictate how we were going to build product. And it just seemed very convoluted to me.
Like a true venture capitalist, Sumit said there were three conditions under which a BU could be started at Carta. One, it had to solve a clear pain point in a differentiated market. 2, it had to solve a problem that couldn't be solved by an existing BU. And 3, it had to be a
billion-dollar ARR opportunity, because anything smaller than that, the cost of building a BU, be it for a $100 million market or building it for a $1 billion market, is the exact same in terms of the time and effort that you have to put in. And if you're going to put in that time and effort and that investment, you want to make sure that you get the most long-term ROI and back on it.
2 quick business terms. ARR is annual recurring revenue, and ROI is return on investment. Along with modifying the role of the BU at Carta, Sumeet took aim at the trifecta structure.
The trifecta structure when I joined Carta was every team could be started by a business person, a product person, and an engineer. And you know, I think that's a very good way to try find product market fit. But as our company started to scale, that model started to break.
At one point, trifectas were present at every level of Carta. This wasn't sustainable, especially at the top of the company, where you had a growing C-suite of executives that needed comparable authority to the chief product and technology officers.
You really have to have a sole voice or a collective group of voices at the top who have the authority to like control the trajectory of a company. And that often comes, you know, from in a venture-backed business, either from a founder or from a group of founders. You know, the joy of being a founder is you can be wrong and people won't hold it against you or they'll forgive you, because usually when you're right, you're very right.
This one change had the largest effect of all. It was a rough transition, but it pushed the company into the next stage of its development. You have to remember, all this happened during the rebrand, so it was as if the history of Carta was now split into the Old Testament and the New Testament.
There was just something to that dynamic between being a founder and not being a founder, which I think gives you a different sway inside the business. And having a trifecta structure at the top of the company was very frustrating for a lot of people, because you know, you had 3 people making all the decisions when really it should just have been 1.
And in 2018, a layer of general managers were added to the org chart. This more traditional structure made everything easier to manage. But the real transition from eShares to Carta, if you will, was from the practical to the scalable. It's pointless to romanticize one period over the other. That's all nonsense. It took Carta 4 years to develop into an efficient machine, and now it has a shot at becoming a world-class company. Startups are staying private longer because they have access to capital that was never available before. The next step is to provide the benefits of a publicly traded company and educate shareholders. Thanks to Uber and Airbnb, everyone is focused on the sharing economy. But if Carta succeeds in its mission, everyone will be an owner. That's why it's so important for the company to level up.
People that you trust will bring in the right people with them, because they're just such great individuals that they'll attract the right talent. Or is people that have been there, done it before, have a lot of experience, through having worked for a number of years, already know people that they could bring in with them and just help start solving problems on day one.
When you hire an executive with years of experience, you don't just get them. Colleagues that worked with them in the past at previous companies join them as well. Carta needed this injection of experienced professionals to keep scaling at a steady pace.
My first job was a company called Kana Communications, which was a SaaS business, B2B SaaS business. And that company grew really rapidly in the middle of the dot-com era. And it was a great experience to see the company grow.
Aaron Forth joined Carta as Chief Product Officer in 2018. He has decades of experience as a product manager and leader. He's built B2B products, built for other businesses, and he's built B2C products for consumers. This experience is valuable to Carta because it serves both markets.
I went into the consumer side of the world and I started working in marketplaces, specifically a company called Half.com, which was out in Philadelphia. The company was acquired by eBay. I ended up working at eBay for about 7 years, always in a product management capacity, but in very different parts of the business.
Not only does Aaron have experience working in different eras of tech, he also has early stage experience working at one of the most popular consumer-facing financial products of all time.
I left eBay and I joined 5 folks working on Mint.com. It was a couple months before it launched, and again, applying a lot of the same practices at this point, kind of in a more of a lead role and starting to manage product managers.
Mint.com was such a hit. The way it could pull in your banking data and aggregate it felt magical at the time. That special level of user experience is something Carta struggled to maintain as it grew. Aaron has a theory why.
When I first got to Carta, we were very much organized by business unit, which was really a proxy for the revenue that the products generated. And the change that I've been trying to affect here is that, no, we should actually have a team that is entirely focused on employees and another that's focused on early stage CFOs or public company stock administrators. Because when you put that lens on, it allows you to do two things. One, get really, really close to who's making decisions, what they care about, and why it matters to them. And you can start to build specialization and kind of deep understanding that will expose new product opportunities for you in the future.
What Aaron's talking about is a customer-centric organizational structure. It makes sense for where Carta is today. The original product wasn't as focused on money movement, but it is now. So it's logical to organize teams around the experiences of specific users. That way they have a champion in the design process.
There's real people involved and there's real experiences in there. And so if you can get teams to think about that from a design standpoint and kind of get the software out of the way, that's another good principle to approach. Maybe one of the reasons that the Carta platform is not as linear and kind of concise or clear right now is because I think the way that the org was structured actually created gaps.
Aaron makes this sound so straightforward, but to make something like this happen in an organization of over 400 people, you need his credibility and you need his patience.
Fastest way to lose credibility is make a really bad like process change or org change and then have it not work out. So, you know, be careful, take it in, listen, and then react, I think. So trying not to make decisions in the first 60 days was kind of my MO.
In addition to Aaron, Carta also hired an accomplished CTO in 2018. With leaders like these, Carta has a much better chance of fulfilling its mission. The company is showing such promise that it's even attracting prominent advisors.
We had this Friday all hands that was called tea time from when Ev and Jack had started the company. And as the company grew and scaled and we got to, you know, not just hundreds of people at the end of 2010, but then, you know, thousands and thousands of people around the world in like 60 offices around the world, that became a more and more highly orchestrated and highly produced event.
Dick Costolo is the former CEO of Twitter. He took the company public in 2012. Before that, he co-founded FeedBurner, which he sold to Google in 2007. He first started using Carta as an investor.
But I only really knew about the digital certs aspect of the business. And then as we became users at my startup, I became familiar with the 419A aspect of the business.
Dick was introduced to Henry through Fred Wilson, the influential general partner at Union Square Ventures.
And then Fred Wilson from Union Square Ventures said, hey, I know you're starting to work more directly with CEOs and on hypergrowth companies where, you know, the bolts are coming off the rocket ship, just like they do when you're growing over 100% year over year. And, you know, you can't scale the way you were scaling by just working more hours because you run out of hours in the day.
At the time, Dick was only working a block away from Carta's San Francisco office. So he accepted the intro and immediately took to Henry's management style.
Henry's super passionate. He's got this great combination of passion and drive and aggressiveness while also being extremely good-natured and kind.
Dick sees common challenges across all hypergrowth startups, but then sees some that are specific to Carta.
It's funny. I mean, from company to company, some of the things are the same, and those include, how do I scale culture when I don't know everyone in the company anymore? You know, I knew everyone here when we were 60 people and came in the morning and said, hi, Bob, hi, Janet. And then in Carta's case, because it has all these interesting business units and lines of business it can go into, even at its young stage, I think the unique challenges there were focus.
Dick's bullish on Carta's mission. As companies stay private longer, they'll need an equity management platform like Carta. And as the former CEO of a publicly traded company, he understands the benefits of staying private.
Activists are much faster to come into stocks now. When you're a private company, you don't have any investors who want the stock to go down. You have everyone's long. You have 100% long shareholders. When you're a public company, boy, you have a lot of people that, you know, you have a lot of investors who want the stock to go down, and they have friends in the media and press, just like the, you know, just like the VCs who are long investors and on your cap table do. All of that creates enormous short-term, near-term pressure on thinking.
This daily volatility has a negative impact on employees who may not be as familiar with the public markets.
You know, in your public company, it starts, you know, now it's this. Oops, now it's half of that. Well, now it's 20% more. And you become, you know, your employees are like anyone else, and their family's calling them and going, you know, what happened today? They read what's going on in the press. And you sort of need to teach them to, hey, we now live in a world where there's going to be this sort of daily scorecard.
Dick remembers getting up in front of the company the night Twitter went public. He said a few words to keep things in perspective.
You know, we priced the stock at $26 a share 24 hours ago, and now it's at $47 a share. Like, so great job, whatever you guys did, adding a, you know, $15 billion of value to the company while I was gone today.
He thinks Carta's early strategy of digitizing paper certificates for private companies will help win the public markets in the long run.
And it'll get to the point in, you know, I would imagine a couple years where when these companies are going public, they're going to say, well, why would we ever switch? And it's all in here and it's already all sorted out and we do everything else through there. So I think that company staying private until for a lot longer plays to Carta's advantage. And will just be a matter of time before they're sort of running the table in the public markets the way they are in the private markets.
The mission is clear. Now all Carta has to do is focus to win the market.
5 to 10 years from now, I think it's a, you know, enormously successful company that's got multiple lines of business firing on all cylinders with repeatable revenue, and that's a great place to be.
Thanks for listening to Execute. In partnership with Carta, this has been a production of Hitstart Media. If you enjoyed the series, please give it a positive review on iTunes and tell your friends about it. Special thanks to Henry Ward, Emily Kramer, Alessandro Chesser, Angela Miller-McGraw, Alex Miller, Mary Margaret Letty, Zibi Nawaka, Cody Anderson, Edison Solomon, and everyone who agreed to be interviewed for this podcast. Visit hitstartmedia.com to read about upcoming productions. Until next time, I'm Theo Miller.